Springtime is the best time to visit Vegas, get the best deals, and if you want the best deals, you got to go to Vegas.com. Whenever I travel to Vegas, I want a cheap room. I want to make sure I'm staying someplace that's nice, cool, comfortable, maybe lavish. You know how you do that? Vegas.com. Spring break, March Madness, NASCAR, clubs, EDM events. It's all happening in the springtime. You got to go to Vegas.com with this exclusive offer. Check this out. $84 off at the Bellagio, $56 off at the Luxor, $90 off at Caesars, $100 off Cirque du Soleil. Everybody knows insiders get the best deals. You got to go to Vegas.com. Vegas.com's proprietary DropWatch tool promises the lowest rates on hotels. DropWatch continues to monitor the price even after you book, and it will notify you of the change to ensure that you get the best deal. Vegas.com. Vegas.com offers the best rates on not just hotels, but also headliner shows, tours, attractions, VIP, bottle service at top clubs. Go to Vegas.com right now. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and enter my code MOHR, M-O-H-R, to receive an extra 10% off everything but air hotel packages. That's Vegas.com. Click on the microphone and get your bonus savings by using my secret code MOHR, M-O-H-R. Vegas.com, the code is MOHR. Book today.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, potheads.
How the fuck you gonna know how to be great if you don't study greatness? Look at the game tape.
Donuts. If you wanna battle, it's either
that you will or you won't. Hey, you know, you're not a bad-looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us.
Hey, man.
More Stories Podcast. Skylar Stone in the house. Thank you, brother, for coming on board.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody. Hit the Amazon banner at jmohr.com. I'm not going to read one because I want to get right to it. But listen, the entire lifeblood of this podcast is you hitting the Amazon banner at jmohr.com. Skylar Stone, email me, by the way, what you bought. All the money goes right to my kids' college fund. I don't see a penny of it. That's all direct deposit. So if you really want to help me, you can buy stuff at jmohr.com. Hit the Amazon banner. Basically, Amazon just wants to know that you got there through
You're not making that up. It actually is a direct deposit to your kids' college
fund. If I made it up, I believe that's a felony.
Yes, that's true.
It's direct deposit.
Yeah.
So everybody's pitching in. And when my kids are getting their diplomas, it's because of the Warriors out there helping out.
I love it.
Skylar Stone, you got a website?
I do, SkylarStone.com.
Sorry, we're out of time. That's been more stories.
Sorry, Matt Damon. We'll get you next week. Yeah, SkylarStone.com. We just did a whole revamp. It's about to launch in about a week. It's going to look way better.
It's weird having a website because the most important thing is having your dates up.
Yeah, dates, but I just need it to be easy to update for my phone because I get really tired of calling somebody in India and walking me through just how to change from October 30th to October 31st.
You had an actual man from India IT guy doing Skype?
Yeah, IT guys just like, you know, oh, you call over, you use this codec code, and I get so freaking mad, and so I just got tired of it.
You ever been to India?
No, I've not been to India.
Eddie Ift was on the podcast a while ago.
I love Eddie.
He was in India, and he said he saw a guy take a shit in the street, and a dog ran up and ate the shit out of the guy's ass.
And then the dog ate his teeth because they were the brightest thing there, right?
Maybe. Jesus Christ. Skylar Stone, newly
married.
Dude,
he makes fun of me all the time. We make fun of each other.
Oh, Eddie's teeth.
Eddie's teeth.
Oh, yeah. Eddie's got giant horse teeth like cats.
Like, I was like, you didn't even jump on that.
All right. I thought you were talking about like an Indian person's teeth.
No, I wasn't clear. Sorry.
You're married now.
I'm married. I'm fucking married.
And you took over like dad duties. She's got like two kids.
Just two kids.
That's got to be very, and they're not like babies. They're not like in little strollers. So like they just grow up.
No.
And you're the dad all the time.
I know. And I just figured out they're not, I mean, the girl just entered phase. Everything is like just the last straw with her. You know what I mean?
Well, that's how I talk to you.
Yeah. Well, that's because you're a jaded old man. No, but she literally, everything is just sigh, 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 sigh. But I'm really good. I don't, you know, a lot of parents punish. I just get real, real with them. Like, I go, look, I can be the asshole that you need to scare you into not doing this, or you and I can just come to an agreement. So the other day, I wrote a no sci contract, and I'm literally going to give this to the first person she dates. It's literally written in, like, legalese with, like, wherein and all kinds of words that only a lawyer would use. And she read it out loud. She said, I don't know what any of this means, and she still signed it, and it's on the fridge right now, and I had my entertainment lawyer help me with it.
But what is the contract?
The contract is I will not sigh if there's a sigh wherein
a no sigh.
Yeah, a no sigh contract.
Ah.
Yeah. And so she literally, like, I just point at it now, then, which is, I don't like grounding. I don't like taking away sleepovers. I don't like taking away sweets. So I just try and come up with really creative, funny ways to say, no, this is how it's going to be.
So you're like the cool stepdad.
Oh, for sure.
You're going to sell her pot.
Dude,
she's,
I know.
In high school.
You guys want Vicodin? What's up? I am the cool stepdad, and they tell me that all the time, you know, because I've been on kids' shows. So when I walk into school,
what
they think
shows
I'm Tom Cruise. Zeke and Luther, Disney XD.
You were on Zeke and Luther?
Shaking it, one of those, whatever it's called.
I got all those on my TiVo because I got the kids.
Yeah, the kids' shows love
all
me.
All those shows teach all kids how to be complete dicks.
Yeah.
Every kid, like on Zach and Cody or Jake and Josh and On Deck, they're like, oh, whatever, Dad.
Yeah, no, I know.
And then your kid repeats it back to you, and you're like, well, he didn't learn that shit here.
1,000%. And it also teaches them all to be, because they really are all, like, desperate actors with, like, insane stage moms. So it teaches kids to actually become those kids, too. And so, like, my kids are already going, get me on a Nickelodeon show. I'm like, oh, dude, calm down with that shit. You know, because I want no part of that. I don't want to push them into that.
I read a thing, being a step-parent, I've seen that also, like, on Dr. Phil, and I'm not using Dr. Phil as a punchline, because I really do actually like Dr. Phil.
I do, too.
And I've seen it on other shows, and I've had it with Drew Pinsky. I've had this conversation with Dr. Drew.
Mm-hmm.
As a step-parent, if you come in after the age of, I want to get it right, let's say 4,
mm-hmm.
you're done. You have no say. Nothing. You cannot discipline a kid if you come in at, like you came in when they were, like, 8.
Yeah.
Like, you can't go to your room, because you are just some guy that just rolled into their life.
First of all, is this on your podcast, this conversation that you're referring to?
This is More Stories Podcast.
No, I'm talking about the one. You're on
my podcast.
I know that. I'm talking about the one with Drew, though.
Private Talks.
Well, I'm actually really interested in that because, you know, right now we're dealing with, that's exactly what we're dealing with. I came in when they were 2 and 4, so I just at the right time.
So you can spank the 2-year-old, leave the 4-year-old alone. You just abuse they were 2 and 4 when you came in?
2 and 4 when I came in.
You've been dating this girl.
I've been with her since 2008.
I didn't know it was that long. It went by so quick.
It did go by quick. Yeah.
Yeah, so they say 4. I think it's 4.
But when I started dating her, that was the everybody's not talking to Skylar for a year. So nobody was talking to me in 2008 and, like, early 2009.
You were busy.
Well, no, I was
getting happy.
I was a little out there.
Yeah.
You know.
And she straightened you up, dust off you, got to stay there. I mean, that's what a good lady does.
I think the kids did. I did, because the kids, like, when you have a kid and you're telling them that they're being wrong, and then in your head, you're like, but wait, I do the same shit, you all of a sudden feel guilty.
I disagree completely.
Why?
Because I can lie to a kid right in his face and I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
No, there's no more ice cream and there's no more.
Well, everybody's got their
can we watch TV? We don't have a TV. But I cannot look my wife in the eye and lie.
You can't.
My wife, you knew me before my wife.
I did.
And it's apples and oranges. Like John Belushi in Animal House.
Yeah.
And now I'm just, like, happy and, like, nothing really bothers me.
Yeah, you know? No.
Imagine me doing this podcast then. How many enemies I would have.
Oh, my God.
It'd be crazy.
No.
Bert Kreischer once said, I don't think people realize the Tupac that used to live inside you. So I think it's the lady, when they say the woman makes the man,
mm-hmm.
and I talk about my wife a lot on the podcast, but the podcast is about my life and my stories. It's called More Stories, and I bring my friends in to tell their stories, and you're going to tell yours, but, like, the day I met my wife, it was like, I don't want to act this way anymore, because I don't want that to walk away. Like, when you see a deer in the woods, and you get real quiet.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it was.
Has she heard you say that?
Yeah, many times.
That's awesome.
But it's not like I had to change. Like, it's the me that I always wanted to be. And, like, you now, you're the you always wanted to be.
She's the nicest. Can I share what she recently did that she texted me from your phone?
My wife?
Yeah.
What, the pictures of her boobs?
No, shut up. Out of nowhere, I just get these sweet texts from Jay's phone, and it's literally his. Does she not have a cell phone?
She's not good with electronics.
Yeah.
She's not from India.
Yeah, she goes, I just wanted to share with you what a great friend you've been, and just writes all the sweet stuff, like, just grabs your phone, and then it's as if she could tell that I was wondering why she's doing it from your phone. She goes, Oh, and by the way, I don't have a phone, so that's why I'm using Jay's. Like, I literally was about to write, why are you using Jay's phone? And she just so connected that she, like, knew that I'm probably going, this is all sweet and dandy, but could you please explain to me what's going on right now?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, you know, you look through your phone. Everybody try this. Like, this is a really good experiment. You can email me the results. Look at your phone. Look at all the contacts in your phone. Pick two names that are, like, friends.
Mm-hmm.
And say, well, I feel like I call this person way more than they call me.
Yeah.
Don't call them.
Yeah.
And watch what happens.
Yeah.
You won't be friends with that person anymore.
That's for sure.
And that happens
in your early 30s for sure.
There's probably six people that I was best friends with, and mm-hmm. I just tried that experiment, and the next thing you know, like, it's a year and a half later, no call, no text, nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's for sure.
It's sad, too.
No, early 30s is the weirdest time because no one warns you that, A, everybody starts losing their grandparents at the exact same time. Like, you're literally, all you see on Facebook is people going, oh, my grandpa died, which really was like a weird era for me because mine was the one that kicked off all my friends'
grandparents. I saw your grandfather at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah. Yeah, that was amazing. You can look that up on YouTube. You look up Skylar Stone Grandpa, I put that on there. And he told old man jokes. It's not like he was sitting there talking about his life. He told, you know, your typical old man jokes, but he slayed. He slayed. Dave Attell had to go on after him. He's like, thanks a lot for putting your grandpa on before me.
Thanks, Grandpa. Now I'll say something illicit. Well, I'm a sea captain. It's nice that people are giving dead grandparent updates on Facebook. That's really what Facebook is for, to let people that you kind of know know that someone close to you has died.
It's a little nutty.
When you met but you did a Facebook post. Like, why would you go on Facebook to say your grandfather died?
Oh, right. No. I'm not saying I kicked off like the all my friends' grandparents started dying right after my grandpa died. I didn't know anybody.
That's right.
That's all
right.
I meant. But these days, if you look on Facebook, dude, people announce everything. Dude, let me tell you one of my fucking least favorite things. Okay, right now there's a trend, and it's a female thing. Sorry to throw you ladies under the bus, but women love doing this. They on Facebook, since you're not on it, maybe you don't know this, not only can you update, you can check in somewhere. So right now, if I want to check in at Fox Sports Radio and say that I'm here, my phone will search the area and I can check into Mulberry Pizza or Fox Sports Radio. Women like to go to the hospital right now when something's going on with them and check into the hospital and go, wish me luck, ... and just, like, scare all their friends. And then there's 94 comments underneath the update going, Sarah, what's happening? What's going on? Please update soon. And, like, it's as if they're sitting there just watching everybody just, like, care about
them. I'm going to see who cares about me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's the reverse.
How many times have you seen that?
Dude, I see it all the time.
Really?
To the point where
my
friend...
Like Foursquare, like when you check in someplace?
Exactly Foursquare. Me and my friend Jerry Artukovich take photos of it, and we send it back and forth to each other. Like, literally all the time. Dude,
how many comments?
I'll fire on my phone right now.
No, it's fine. I believe you. How many comments are like, hope you die?
Guys do say fucked up shit. You know, they're like, you know, is it mine? You know, like, you know, like, is it mine? Or, I'm sorry. Oh, dude, I saw somebody make like an NFL, just someone said, you know, you shouldn't be dating an NFL player. I hope it heals like fast. Like, guys say fucked up shit on Facebook, dude.
I want to know about this. These are great stories Skylar's about to drop. Listen to this first. My friend, does shaving irritate your skin, give you nicks, bumps, razor burn? You know, you probably blamed your razor all these years and thought upgrading it every time with the latest gimmick would make your problems go away. But upgrading your razors usually just cost you more money and made you feel ripped off. What you really needed all these years was to simply upgrade your shave cream. Shaving gels and foams are mostly air. Air is not a lubricant. This can cause irritation and discomfort. That's why you got to go by Cremo, C-R-E-M-O. Cremo is an impossibly slick, foam-free shave cream. It comes in a tube, not a can. Almost any razor will glide effortlessly and comfortably over your sensitive skin. If you use Cremo, with virtually no bumps, burn, or irritation, don't waste money on complicated and costly razor blades. Get Cremo at Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS, pharmacy. You got to get the Cremo. I'm telling you, Cremo works. Red cap, white tube, Cremo. Tricom, my friends, works like no other anti-itch product in the wintertime. Let me tell you, my hands get like deep white cracks in them. But you know what? I finally discovered Tricom. I use it. Those cracks go away and they have stayed away. Recent study shows that Tricom, 5 times more effective at reducing itch than 1% hydrocortisone, which is a topical steroid. You don't want to be on steroids, do you? Why are you going to rub steroids on your hands? What's wrong with you, boy? Tricom's formula has a patented soothing ingredients, steroid-free, Products containing steroids like hydrocortisone can thin the skin and can only be used sparingly. You can use Tricom anytime you want. Use Tricom to relieve winter itches, which is getting worse during these cold, cold, dry winter months. Use Tricom in warmer months, too, on bug bites, poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac, other common skin irritations. Use Tricom. Tricom works almost immediately, and the relief lasts. It's what I use. Tricom is backed by the itch-free guarantee. If you are unsatisfied with Tricom, you can mail back the empty tube for a full refund. Use the whole thing. They'll still give you your money back. Tricom, my friends. Get after it. No steroids, and it works. And I put my name on that.
This morning, Sandra Snead wrote a joyful status. This miss is a soon-to-be Mrs. Over 300 friends liked her engagement post, and it got 76 comments. Sandra, you're one popular gal. Geico also has a comment on your status. Did you know you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance in just 15 minutes by switching to Geico? Just a way we're trying to help cushion a nice little nest egg for the future misses. Hashtag getting hitched. Hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
All right. Can I say your fiance's name?
Yeah, that's fine.
Nicole. The first
well,
time
my
you,
wife.
Your wife. Yeah. I sat on my reading glasses. I'm not.
Yeah.
What? Okay. Where did you meet this lady?
Irvine Improv.
Really?
Yeah.
What was she doing? She wasn't a waitress, was she?
No, come on, dude. No. Daddy don't play like that. So I'm at the Irvine Improv and Joe Coy gets off stage. No, Jamie Kennedy gets off stage and goes, bro, you've got to see this girl over to the right, third row. Unbelievable. Joe Coy gets off stage, goes, Jamie, you weren't kidding. And next thing you know, I get on stage and, don't ask me why I was going after both those guys. I wasn't headlining, but, so I go on and I see her and I literally could not like take my eyes off her. And after the show, I go outside. I used to collect emails, and that's why I have like thousands of emails. And so I had this like little clipboard. She comes over, puts her email down. I put a little star next to it. This is the MySpace days, so I searched her for her on MySpace. I message her, and I'm like, "Hey, what's up?" I go, "You're really beautiful. We should hang out sometime." And she said, "Yeah, now's not a good time." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I totally thought that was just her way of, you know, kind of just kicking me to the curb. And then 6 months later, she messaged me and said, hey, I'm getting a divorce. You want to hang out sometime? So what she meant by that was like, hey, the shit's hitting the fan right now. You know,
MySpace compared to like Facebook and Twitter, it was, you might as well have just written a letter and mailed it to somebody.
Yeah.
Like the time it took for that indie band to tell you about their bullshit night.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Come see all five bands you've never heard of in a town you don't live in. MySpace, look at the twinkly unicorn in the corner.
Banks are still, bands are still on there, dude. Bands and black people are the only people on MySpace now.
Why would black people be on MySpace?
Dude, because I think they just feel like it's their own site. I swear on my life, if you go on there, it's bands and black people.
Really?
I swear on my
life.
What
about like black people in bands? What if it's like Fishbone, Bad Brains, Parliament Funkadelic? Then all of a sudden,
they're set.
Then I'm buying stock in MySpace.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where'd you guys go for your first date? On my podcast, right here, I've told people first date with my wife. We went to the nativity scene on Ocean Boulevard in Santa Monica, and they line up all the mannequins.
Oh, yeah.
And they do, like, Station of the Cross and all that. Like,
just, that's not a bad first date.
Yeah, and the ocean's behind you, and it's just, it's so serene.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, I was nervous, and it was, this can't be real. It can't be happening.
Yeah, I
can't really be walking down the street with Nikki Cox.
Yeah.
Where is the paparazzi? Where are the trumpets?
Yeah.
Why isn't everyone going, what? What's going on here? Why? What time did the magazines come out tomorrow? Yeah. Surely.
Yeah, surely.
You know, why isn't the CNN ticker? Why
did you
this...
cover it up with jokes? Were you just trying to be extra funny?
I learned immediately she's as funny and funnier than I am. So like there's no reference. Like if you do like you could do a line from Annie Hall and she'll do like the next four and you're like, oof. Because one thing that comics have
reference.
over everyone is you out reference and then you get to explain it to them, make the person feel dumb.
Oh, dude, that's me in Nicole's relationship. She's like, so the Talking Heads, that's a show or a band?
No, it's
like,
a band. Stop making sense. Why would they call it that? Like, no, it was like a conceptual thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
But like my wife, you know, she taught me, you know, stuff. A lot of like, I didn't know like Sondheim and I didn't know what a great director Fosse was and like that Lenny was directed by, you know, Bob Fosse. And like,
is she the one that turned you on to Wainwright?
Yes.
She is?
Yeah. So we're. So
but that's fun either way, though. It's fun that you have someone that's right there with you. But with Nicole, she said she loves it. She's like, look, I just, you know, my father, you know, as sweet and as smart as he is, like, he's not, you know, he's a washer and dryer repairman. He's never really been the guy that's, like, gone out to try and learn everything about every band and every movie. She's like, so I feel like you're, you know, doing something for me that nobody else did. You know what I mean? So it's good either way. You know what I mean?
So you're also a father figure.
I mean, I guess.
They say women are either running towards their father when they get married or they're running away from their father when they get married.
Maybe they're, maybe she, no, because he's still in her life and he's a great man. So
no, not, yeah.
Yeah.
So she's running toward, you're, something about you reminds her of her father?
Oh, yeah. I could definitely take that. Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're always fixing washers and dryers.
You know me. Dude, I can't even turn on my printer.
Where'd you guys go on your first date?
It's actually insane because I took her to a place that I thought would be classy. When I first moved here, I used to drive cars for Cadillac, and I picked up, like, all these people. I picked up Russell Crowe. I took him to the Academy Awards, and I swear, took him
you
to the
like
Academy
Awards. You were
like a driver. I was a driver.
Did you wear, like, a little hat?
Yeah, no hat. You just had black pants, white shirt, black tie, and you weren't, you could introduce yourself, but the rule was you don't speak unless spoken to. You know what I mean? And then once they open that up, you know, you're allowed to, you know, play it as it goes. So I pick up Russell Crowe, and he doesn't talk to me for like 10 minutes. He's just making out with this chick. And then all of a sudden, he goes, pull over, mate. And so I pull over, and he goes, here, get out of the car. And he hands me cash. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? And he goes, just get some stuff from the store. And so there's a store that we're like close to Hollywood and Highland, and that's where, you know, the Academy Awards are, for those of you out that don't know. And so I go over to the store. I'm walking around, and I could tell as I believe in pheromones. I believe in signs. I could tell that he was about to, like, you know, hook up. And I know he hooked up. So I went in there, and I'm walking around. I'm letting him have a good time. I'm picking up some stuff. I got some gum and whatever. I go back to the car. It's a big Cadillac Escalade. The reason they had us driving all these was they were debuting the Cadillac Escalade. So I come back, and Russell definitely, you know, got a feel for it, if you know what I mean. I come into the car, and I get in the car. I drive to the Academy Awards. I had to circle around twice because it's a big deal. It is like a military operation when you're dropping someone out the Academy Awards. Like,
well, I would hope so.
Well, dude,
you said that, like, you guys wouldn't believe how crazy it is to drop Russell Crowe off at the Academy Awards. I thought I would just pull up and say, beat it. Apparently, there's a whole system in place.
I don't
get murdered.
I don't just mean security wise. I'm sorry. So let me be clear. I mean, like publicists have an opinion as to when somebody, you don't want to show up in Tom Cruise. Has already shown up because now you're not going to get the photos because they're already, you know, focused on Tom Cruise. So there was like a walkie-talkie in the car that's literally just a publicist and a security detail informing me, like, you know, all right, okay, we got Tom leaving. Tom is leaving. Okay, all right, this would be a great time for Russell. Are you near? And I'd have to be like, I'm sorry, I'm not. And then they're screaming at you as if it's your fault that there's all this congestion and all these, like, paparazzi and autograph hounds out there.
Jamie Kennedy just left now. Now. Land now. Jamie Kennedy.
Because we kicked him out, okay?
Jamie Kennedy wasn't invited. Bring in Russell Crowe.
Actually, this is like 2000. Jamie might have been invited. So
you know what's great about your improv story? Joe Coy, Skylar Stone, Jamie Kennedy, Joe Coy completely bald. Out of the three, has the best head of hair.
What do you mean?
He's just got better hair than all of you.
Better than me?
Yeah.
What's wrong with my hair?
Nothing. I'm right behind you. Go on. So you're at the Academy Awards.
I got good hair. I've had it done three times.
I thought that was going to be a huge laugh.
I've had it done three times.
You what?
I've had my hair done three
times.
You've
had plugs?
Not plugs. They take it from the back of your head and they move it up front.
Well, what do you call that then?
It's hair restoration. It's 1,000% different. They used to put fake hair and plug it into your hair.
I remember.
And it wasn't real hair. That's why it was called plugs. Okay. But now they cut you open in the back of your head, and they take the follicles out, and they plant it. It's like chia head.
You've had it done. Chia. But if it worked, why'd you do it three times?
Because it kept going behind the work.
the reason I'm asking is because I am going to get this done eventually.
Okay. Well, you should.
And I actually told you I was going to get it done, but they wanted to put me under anesthesia for 8 hours. And I'm like, you could replace a fucking heart in 4 hours. What are you talking about?
I never told you they put you under anesthesia.
No, I told you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's
right. I thought you said, I'm all right, Spider. And you were like, fuck that. My guy, they just give you an Ativan and you just sit there.
Yeah, absolutely.
No. But you also said it's the absolute single most painful thing in the history of man.
No, it is not.
You have told me that.
I did not say that. Kidney stones are. And I've had three of those. One last year. I'm trying to pull up to the Academy Awards, and I get in the car, and he gets out of the car, and after he gets out of the car, and I drop him off, right after Tom Cruise leaves. I turn around, and you know the little hangers where you hang your dry cleaning on the side?
The little handles up there?
Yeah, the little handles. Those one is on the ground, like pulled down, and the other one is hanging. So just hanging by one. It's as if he like got into some sort of like, you know, workout pose.
Yeah, he's a fucking gorilla.
Like a gorilla. Like, ooh, and just like literally lunging into her. You know, I would love to actually find the footage of her walking down the red carpet and see if she was like wobbling a little bit. But yeah, he Russell Crowed her, Russell Plowed her. It was great.
So when you drop him off, do you go like, hope you win? What did he say?
I didn't say anything, dude. And he was an okay tipper. You know, he was the best tipper ever. Gave me $200 and talked to me the whole time about acting and really wanted to make sure that I understood how to get an agent and a SAG card. Bradley Whitford. Coolest
really?
Guy. Yeah, from West Wing. Bradley Whitford. So cool.
I have never heard a nice thing about Russell Crowe until you just said that he was a good tipper. I've only heard he's like an absolute certifiable fucking loon.
He was fine to me. Absolutely fine
pull
to
over,
me.
Mate.
Yeah, he was.
Pull over and let me
mate.
Fuck.
Pull over, mate.
Maybe he's mean to people because they don't pull over and let him have sex with his date.
Yeah, look, sir, I can't do that. That wasn't in my instructions. Dude, I'm Russell Crowe, all right? I'm the Gladiator. Pull over. Yeah, no, he...
My wife and I were at the Hotel Bel Air, and we realized we were in the suite that he was in the night he won the Oscar for, I think it was Gladiator.
How'd you find that out?
Because it's just one of those things you find, I don't know.
Oh.
I don't remember how, but okay. It was like, wow, fuck. And we just kind of sat there bugging out. Like, he came here right after the Oscar. Like, he won an Oscar and just sat here.
You do the same thing I do, don't you? Even though you live in LA, once in a while, you just grab a hotel room with your wife, don't you?
Yeah, 48 hours. If you want to stay healthy.
Isn't it great?
You go someplace.
Yes.
In town.
Yes.
Just go 6 miles from your house. Go to like a, I like Hilton. They got a good rewards program.
Uh-huh.
They will reward you with like a nice bump, nice little room.
Nice.
Hilton rewards program. Get a room. Check in on Friday. Drop the kids off at the grandparents. Sunday, come and just never get out of fucking bed.
Dude.
Room service, piss, shit, shower, fuck, shave, repeat.
It's the best.
And then just, I mean, sleep for 14 straight hours. And like, if you have people that are listening are like, well, I don't sleep that long. Well, if you have kids, you will sleep that long.
Well, dude, and by the way, you will sleep that long with those blackout curtains, dude. You'll sleep longer than you've ever thought.
All
you
the
could
movies
sleep.
Are on the TV.
That's the best.
It's like, oh, wow. And you know, it's amazing. You know this because you stay in hotels because you do stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
SkylarStone.com. All the movies that you watch. I'm not talking about pornos. I'm talking about real movies. That's where I watch all my movies are in mm-hmm. hotel rooms. I'm never going to a goddamn movie theater again. I don't hear crying babies like, oh, that's your ass, man.
Yeah.
I don't want people yelling at the screen.
Yeah.
The amount of movies that have stars that never fucking even come out that are great. Like, you watch a movie with, like, I'm making this up. It'll literally be like, Dustin Hoffman's in an argument with, like, Mark Ruffalo and Alec Baldwin. And then Meryl Streep comes in and kicks him in the balls.
Yeah.
And you're like, this never came out?
Yeah.
Like, what chance do I have in show business ever again? Like, you know,
I remember a John Cusack, Morgan Freeman, and...
Morgan Freeman and John
Kevin
Cusack.
Kevin Spacey movie. Straight to
DVD, right in the bin with Morgan Freeman.
There are seven deadly sins. Sloth, greed... Gluttony.
And driving Russell Crowe to the Oscars. Right to DVD.
Straight to DVD.
And these are huge stars.
Yeah, dude.
And you watch these movies and you go, holy shit. Like, Mark Ruffalo got nominated for the movie where he was the sperm donor for the lesbian couple.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the name.
Getting the names wrong. Catherine Keener, somebody. But, like, nobody saw that. That movie, you couldn't go to the goddamn Megaplex. Nobody goes like, oh, shit, Catherine Keener and Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
Got news for you, listeners. Those are like the actors. Those are the people that are actually doing it. There's Meryl Streep and everybody, of course.
Yeah.
But there's other people out there like Bobby Cannavale. Like, who the fuck saw the station agent in a theater?
Yeah,
nobody.
Yeah. Nobody.
And it's perfect.
Yeah.
There's a midget.
Yeah.
Who you now know is Peter Dinklage because he's so goddamn talented. You just know him from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But him and Laura Linney and Bobby Cannavale were in like a movie called The Station
Laura
Agent.
Laura Linney, dude.
There's so many. Well, you have a story with Laura Linney?
I just love her, dude.
You love her?
Oh, my God. I love her.
So Bradley Whitford, coolest guy you drove, biggest dick.
Biggest dick I drove? Oh, man. I got pretty lucky, man. Everyone else, drove some people. Somebody drove Michael Keaton, said he wasn't particularly nice to him.
I've heard that, too.
But which is weird because, I mean, Michael Keaton's like probably the biggest reason I'm an actor. I saw Birdman, by the way. It's really good.
I don't know what that is.
It's his new movie. It's going to be like his return, dude. It's great. I mean, although there's this thing he's doing.
Like Birdman of Alcatraz, Bird?
It's just called Birdman because it's funny. It's about an actor who used to be the biggest actor in the world and is most known for playing a superhero named Birdman, and did Birdman 1 and 2, but didn't want to do 3, and then his career ended. But what I don't like about him is all these, just like you went, oh, wow, so you obviously get the symbolism that it's very close to Michael's life. He's pulling this move, because I went to a SAG Q&A screening, and he is doing the Q&A, and the moderator goes, it's just amazing. I mean, when you read the script, you must have just seen how much this is just like your life. He goes, you know, I don't really see it that way. And I'm like, dude, shut up. You're so
pompous. Turned out, well, why does everyone tap out of Batman? Like,
what do you mean? Like, you just stopped playing him?
Michael Keaton was Batman.
Yeah, keep that cash cow going.
I'm fucking out of here. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And then Clooney obviously did it very well, I thought. And yeah. He's like, I'm not fucking doing this again. This is crazy.
Well, no, he did so bad. You saw it,
Clooney?
Right?
Clooney?
Yeah.
I didn't notice a difference between any of the Batmans.
Okay.
They were all
you need to
Batman.
Watch Batman and Robin again, because there was even a cod piece like over his junk that was literally hilarious, dude.
Now, who was between those two?
Like, what's that sport where you have balls
jousting?
In like a... What?
Like jousting medieval
times? No, it's like
stuff?
A ball in a net, and you throw it, and it curves through it, and it goes away.
Wow, you're
I'm really killing it, aren't I? I'm doing physical things on a podcast.
Give me other Batman. Who else played Batman?
Val Kilmer.
Yeah, he was good.
Val Kilmer was good. Keaton was good.
Vito's laughing, engineer. But like, to me, none of them, they were all just Batman. You're in the, there must be something about wearing that suit. It must be like 100 pounds where like, even if they're giving you $18 million, you go, I don't give a fuck if it's $118 million. If I got to stand in that suit for one more day and call Drew Barrymore Poison Ivy, I'm going to kill myself.
I think Michael Keaton's a real actor, and I don't think he wanted to do that forever, dude. He's a real fucking actor.
The guy was in Night Shift. He's a comic.
But he's also in Pacific Heights and was menacing.
Oh, you're right. Like, George Clooney's not a real actor? Did you see the fucking Descendants? He should have won the best actor instead of that stupid silent movie.
And Kilmer's a real actor, too. Okay, you have a point.
Yeah. Val Kilmer's a real big actor.
And then Bale.
A physically big actor.
Willow.
He's a big man, Val Kilmer. Guy looks like Steven Seagal now.
No. He lost all the weight. He's actually very proud of that on Twitter.
On a Subway diet?
Yeah.
On Twitter?
Yeah. He's on Twitter.
So, excuse me.
You got
Facebook.
A Kilmer right here.
Facebook is for women going to the hospital, MySpace for bands and black people,
yep.
And Twitter are for actors that have lost a lot of weight.
Yes, absolutely.
So where did you go on your first date? You never even got to it.
Well, so one of the other people that I picked up was Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger.
Great guy.
He is a great guy.
Great guy.
And so real quick story about him. I pick him up in Laguna Hills, and he's a presenter at the Golden Trailer Awards, which is like the Oscars for movie trailers. And
I hosted it last year.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No way.
Swear to God.
Well, he was a presenter at, this is like 2001 or something. So I pick him up, and after the words, he goes, Skyler, take me to Pacific Dining Car. This is like pre-iPhone, so it's like you got your fucking Thomas guide. You're like, okay, G4, what street is Bixel? Where the hell's the 110? Like, you don't know what you're doing. Plus, I just moved here. So he's like, I'll tell you how to get there. And so he just tells me how to get there. I get there, and he goes, all right. He goes, get out of the car. And so I'm like, oh, God, is he going to fuck his wife like Russell Crowe?
Sweet dreams. No, he's going to cut your head off.
Yeah, exactly. But the funny thing is, he's got his wife and he's got his wife's best friend. So I'm like, is he going to fuck both of them? Like, what's happening right now? He tells me to get out of the car. I get out of the car. And they get out of the car, too. I'm like, okay, now I don't get it. Are we going to watch someone else fuck up? Is this like where you're looking through the
window?
How
about this story is degenerated? Poor Skyler's cars aren't even for driving anymore.
Yeah.
They're just for fucking starlets.
Yeah, no, so I'm just fucking, I get out of the car.
Skyler sees a Mini Cooper and gets a boner. All right.
So we get out of the car and it's
and you all ate together. The end.
Yeah.
So where'd you go on your first date?
Pacific Dining Car. So next thing you know, it's our first date and we just left a Halloween party. We go into Pacific Dining Car and everybody knows me there because I've been coming there for like, you know, several years. At this point, I've been going in there for like 8 years. So we get into Pacific Dining Car. And Mario's always my waiter, and there's this table I always sit at, and they sit me at this table, but as I walk in, there is the loudest douchebag you've ever heard at a restaurant in your whole life. He is screaming, he is, like, demanding things, and he
keeps
saying,
man's name was Barry Katz.
Hey, man.
Undeniable man.
That was a live undeniable man. That was not a button. That was not recorded. He is actually...
This isn't the radio show. This is a podcast.
I know. It's just still
Katz just walked in.
It's exciting.
So you're at the thing, and the guy's going crazy.
So he's going crazy, and he's demanding. He goes, get me water to my table right fucking now. And he's slamming his fist on the table. And there's already water on his table. So this guy's blacked out. So I go to Mary. I go, can I say something? He's like, you probably shouldn't. It's not going to. Well, if you want to, go ahead. So I go over there. And I go, hey, buddy. And it's my first date. So I got to be cool, right? Like, you can't not, like, notice this douchebag.
Well, why do you need to go over there at all? Who cares? A yelling guy at the other end of the restaurant.
I don't even think you understand. This is interrupting you. Like, people can't even put in orders.
Well, there's a lot of other people in the restaurant. Why are you the superhero?
Because I'm on my first date and I want to be a badass.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Right. So I walk over.
Ego.
You know, I didn't want to get anything physical. So, you know, it's our first date.
Olivia Newton-John, is that what we're talking about?
Is that what's going on right now, baby? Because Vince Vaughn's on the date, and that's how it went down. So this is August 2008, and I walk over. I go, hey, buddy. I go, listen, I don't want to, you know, start anything, but you keep asking for water, and you have water on your table. And he just has that look, like you were saying earlier, like that Forrest Whitaker, Tom York eye. Like, he's got one eye that's just, like, going back and forth, right? And he's just looking at me, and he stands up. He puts his hands down, and he comes towards me, and he shoves me. Dude, you would have thought he was Will Smith and Hancock. I went flying. This guy was, like, on LSD or not PCP. I go flying, dude. I'm all of a sudden, like, in a booth. It didn't go exactly how I planned on it.
Watch
going.
This, honey. I'll handle this. Hey, buddy, you yeah. already have.
So he shoves me, and I get up, and then all of a sudden, all hell is broken loose. People are walking out on checks. This is a fine dining restaurant. Your average bill at this restaurant is like $240, you know, just for, like, you know, two people that don't even have a dessert. So I'm running. All these people are running out of the restaurant, and they're all running in their cars. And all of a sudden, I realize,
what is he, Godzilla?
Dude, this guy was...
guy in a restaurant. You're acting like it's fucking Tokyo.
Dude, he was onto me. Because he grabbed knife. Dude. He starts grabbing knives. He's got knives in his hands. He gets in a fight with Mario, my waiter.
There's
and all
always
of a sudden,
cops there.
Huh?
Every time I've been there, it's littered with cops. There's always cops.
Every time I go there, it's Nicolas Cage by himself in a corner eating two bloody steaks. I swear to God, I have brand new hair,
and I want to show you it. I was married to Lisa Marie, and it worked out.
He's
all right, so the guy shoves you.
He's shoving everybody. He's fighting everybody. He's got this butter knife, and he's like, you know, which also sounds funny now that I think about it. He's swinging around a butter knife.
Run for your life! One guy with a crooked eye and a butter knife.
So all of a sudden, I go out. I'm like, well, we should probably get out of here. So we start walking out. We get in my.
She was like, you handled that.
Well, we did. You're going to love this, dude. This is nowhere near the end. So we go outside and we get in our car, and all of a sudden he starts walking out with his date. And so they walk out to their car and they start, like, kind of slowly driving away. And I realize this motherfucker's going to get away with this. And so I turn to Nicole, and Nicole turns to me. She goes, let's follow him. I'm like, oh my God, this bitch is as crazy as me. This girl, this woman belongs in my life. So we start following him. We have no lights on, and we're calling. I'm not joking. We call 911. We get on the 110 North. That, like, basically leads you out of town. Then we got on the 10 East. Now we're literally heading towards, like, Vegas. So we're on the 10. We're calling 911, and we're several cars back. And this guy's, like, he's swerving, and he's going back and forth. And he's got a date in the car. And I'm like, this is insane. So we call 911. We get transferred to CHP. Out of nowhere, this helicopter comes, and it literally, I'm in a white car, he's in a white car, and I probably should have maybe, I just said he's in a white car, four-door sedan, I forget to mention, like, you know, it's a completely different kind of car. So all of a sudden, he's got a light on my car, and literally, you can literally hear, like, you know, another helicopter coming from behind, so that one's coming up on the right. All these cops are speeding from behind on the freeway. So you have cops and cars, cops, and helicopters, and literally they're all, like, trying to pull me over. And I literally get out of the car, and I point forward. I go, that way. I'm, like, pointing at that white car. I don't know how, like, my little charade worked, but next thing you know, they get up to the next car, and they literally tell them
to pull
over.
How about the helicopter pilot goes, oh, sorry, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the guy's going 400 miles an hour in a helicopter, and okay. Skyler's outside, like, Dukes of Hazzard. Like, no, not me, him. And they're like, all right, so have a great night.
Yeah, I know. It's Spicoli up there. And I was like, got it, dude. So we pull over. I end up in a Del Taco parking lot. He's in a 7-Eleven parking lot across the street.
So and you still got eyes on him. You're copping it out. I like it.
We sat in the car. It was as if we had popcorn and we're watching the greatest movie of our life. Dude, this shit was Training Day. They literally pulled him out of this car, and, like, I mean, they treated him like he was a terrorist, and they had so many guns drawn. I've never seen so many guns drawn in my life, dude, and I've been in a firing range, and I'm watching this guy, and they go up, and they put the cuffs on him, and then they call back my phone, and they go, hey, they want to meet up with you. I'm like, I'm right across the street. They're like, are you out of your mind? I'm like, yeah, dude, we're literally 37 miles outside of town. That's how long this took to, like, for CHP to catch this guy. So they were really weird, though. They're like, you're a hero, I guess, but you're also crazy. Like, you could have, like, really gotten, you know, if this guy figured out that you're one of the people following him, you could have gotten a lot of trouble. So I ended up having to testify against him, and I got him put in jail, and all the bills had to be paid. For all the people that walked out on the bills that night, he had restitution, covered all that.
But what was the offense? Why was he arrested? DWI?
Oh, no, dude, he fucking swung knives at people and attacked waiters.
Only because you went up and complained about his fucking water table.
Dude, you're out of your fucking mind.
Granted.
Dude, he shoved me.
Not a little bit, Skyler, a little bit. That's got a little out of line yourself. You went over to the table yourself.
God damn it.
You told the guy, hey, you know what? You got enough water for yourself.
All right, maybe I shouldn't mind my own business, but the point is...
No, it's a great story.
Yeah.
And you followed that guy. I have one diner story that's not nearly as interesting as yours, and it's quick. I walk into the Market Diner across my apartment when I have an apartment in Manhattan, and it's just a place where, like, limo drivers go and Irish mob guys go.
Uh-huh.
I walk into the Market Diner. It's, like, 11 in the morning, and I just go to get my coffee before I go to, like, Katz's office for a meeting.
Yeah.
And there is a 600-pound man on a stool. Like, you know, the stool at the counter of a diner.
Yeah.
It only holds like your ass or my ass. Mm-hmm. This guy's ass is like 18 asses. So like only like his asshole.
he's probably actually enjoying it.
Is on the stool. And he's like just kind of blobbing and flowing over the like two stools on either side.
Mm-hmm.
And then the waitress, Mary Muldoon, she comes out and she goes, how's your lobster, hon? And he goes, awful. You ordered a fucking lobster at a fucking mob diner at 11 in the morning, and he was indignant that anybody could serve this. He just went awful. Like, how dare you unfreeze that fucking lobster that came out of the Hudson River in 1984? Awful. I got a refund. I'm not enjoying my lobster.
He wasn't there for the dude. He's there for the asshole tickle.
He's there for the ambiance. Barry Katz, get into Skylar Stone's head.
I love Skylar Stone. There's something about him that is just like, I don't know what it is about you, but it's like you always seem to persevere. But yep. Like that waiter story, that's metaphorical for your career, you know.
What do you mean?
Whoa.
Dude, I'm ready. He's going to open me up. I'm ready.
Because everybody believes
Thanks
that.
Thanks for saving the podcast.
Dick. You didn't like that story?
I love the story. Katz and I are sharing a mic, like a huge cock in our face.
Okay.
I feel like Joe Perry and Steven Tyler at a concert.
Crazy crying.
Why didn't you like that story?
I just said I love that story.
You're a liar. All right, go ahead.
Skyler, look at me. That's a fucking great story.
All right.
Relax. Jesus Christ.
He's like, thanks for saving the podcast.
You can't.
I tell a great story.
Are you that insecure?
No, but you
that
know.
Story
another sweet. Metaphor about his career right there.
All right.
That's it.
Listen, any story that has the words butter knife in it.
Comes in. Like fucking Hank Aaron off the bench.
But anyway, it's a metaphorical story for your career as well as what just happened just now.
How?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
Everybody believes. No one looks in the mirror and says, I'm wrong. It never happens. So think about all the possibilities of that story, how that never would have happened if you'd have done something a little bit different. Think of all the possibilities and what wouldn't have gotten that reaction. Okay, it's the same with going in for an acting audition or going into a stand-up gig and doing it a certain way or going into a room and the way you talk to the manager of the club or however it is, there's always something that you could do differently that could change the outcome to be best serve you as opposed to being a story that's in a podcast about how something went totally wrong.
Right.
And it's the same other thing, just that's part one. And part two is like how you just reacted. You're with another comedian. You've been doing comedy how many years?
I mean, over 10 years.
Over 10 years.
I feel like we're at the principal's office all of a sudden.
Yeah, right.
He's been doing comedy over 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So two guys with 35 years of comedy experience. He makes a joke like he's at the comedy table upstairs of the cellar and the olive tree, and you spend about I'd say a good minute and a half, 2 minutes saying, what, my podcast isn't good? It's not good?
It was not a minute and a half, first of all. That's exaggeration. But no, Jay's someone to look up to, and he's like, dude, have three good stories
ready.
No, but
he's a comedian.
I think Gatz is saying you should have said, go fuck yourself. Immediately.
Oh, I'd say that all the time to you.
Not just then. I did get way in your wheelhouse.
You got in my wheelhouse.
I'm like, thanks for saving the podcast. You didn't like my story.
It's been a crazy week. All right,
why? So. What's so crazy about your week?
I don't know.
Now he's doing the third thing, which is blaming another factor on why he reacted the way he did.
Holy Dr. Phil Katz, man.
No, but see, Barry also thinks he knows everything, okay? So he's not going to be right
what
on all three.
What the fuck are you talking about, man?
you should have just said fuck off.
I wish the listener could have seen Katz, big eyes, fists, shaking his hands. You look like a marionette doll. It was great.
Sorry, I was making a point.
Barry's become Yoda on podcasts.
No,
I've heard him on a lot of podcasts.
No, we all agree with that. You have become Yoda on podcasts. And it's very good advice you give people, Katz. Don't back out.
I actually like his podcast a lot. I've listened to quite a few. The Doug Herzog one is my favorite one. That's pretty good.
Doug Herzog.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Jason Goldberg one. That was good, too.
Jason who? Gelbart?
Goldberg.
Jason Goldberg?
Mm-hmm. Ashton Kutcher's part.
The guy who created Punk'd with Ashton Kutcher.
Well, you had the show Con.
Well, that's why I was very interested in hearing the Goldberg story.
You're like, why does one take off? Why does one not take off?
Well,
you were first.
Well, here's a funny story. It's not really a matter of first. I was.
Let Jay be the judge of that.
Yeah, don't worry, I will. So I auditioned for Punk'd at the same time that I sold Con. And it's funny, I actually find myself at another crossroads right now between two projects. I don't know if I should take one or the other, and I don't want to make the wrong choice this time. And what it was at that time, it was Con or Punk'd. And every rep was in my ear saying, you got to do Con, because it's your own show, you're going to creative control, you know what I mean? It's your thing, you have more roles on it, you're a writer, you're a producer.
But I thought Ashton Kutcher created Punk'd.
No, I'm talking about Con.
With Jason Goldberg.
Yeah. Okay. So I could either do Con or I could do Punk'd. So, and I chose Con. And I look back sometimes and I'm like, I look at Dax Shepard and then I look at, you know, myself.
Oh, you would have been like one of the guys on Punk.
Yes. Oh. Because what happened was I got an audition and I went over to Santa Monica and I wanted to blow their minds. So I went to a Halloween horror shop and I bought some fake blood.
And then I sucked all their dicks.
This is an undeniable story. I think Barry will appreciate this. So I got some fake blood because they said, listen, you're going to go in and you're going to tell a story, just some true story. Don't make anything up. And they're like, don't try and be funny, just tell the story. And I'm like, all right, fine. So I go in there, and it wasn't with Jason. It was with someone else who's not even at MTV anymore. I think he went and ran Oprah's company now or something. But so I go in there, Danny Villa, that was his name. So I go in there, and I grab the fake blood, and I put it in my mouth, and I call my manager at the time, and I make up a fake story that I just got punched. And I said, listen, I'll still go in there, but just please warn them that this just happened. You know, like, I really don't want to... You know, I don't want to lose this job. And like, well, what happened? I'm like, dude, we don't have time. I'm running late. Just call them. So they called them. And when I got there, you could tell they'd already been told that, hey, just got punched. Like, he might be a little, he's coming down. And so I walk, and this is a true story. I walk in and I go down the hallway and you could tell that they're ready. They're literally staring at me and like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like holding my face and like they got me some ice. They bring it over. They're like, you want to wait a little bit? Do you want to reschedule? I go, no. I go, let's just, and you know, Danny goes, you know, why don't you got to tell a story. Why don't you just tell this story? And I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted him to do. I'm like, let's do it. So I go in there and I make up a story saying that I've been dating this girl, Terry Barrera, and I actually was dating a girl named Terry Barrera at the time. I go, but you know, her other boyfriend figured out about me. And he ran into me outside.
Hey,
what? And so he runs into me. And I said, you know, we got into a parking lot. He punches me in the face. And, dude, he's on the edge of his seat. I'm telling this whole story about, like, how this went down. And then finally at the end, he's like, this is, dude, he goes, I am so sorry this happened to you. I'm like, I'm sorry. I go, that's probably not what you wanted to hear. I go, I don't know how that's going to get me a job. And he goes, no, it's about being real. And I love that you didn't try and be funny. And I love that you even cried during parts of it. I literally cried while telling the story because I'm like, and now I'm thinking me and Terry are going to break up, which sucks. And like, so I'm telling this whole story. And he goes, all right, Skylar, well, if there's anything I can do, you know, let me know. I'm like, well, you've just been punked. And I put the fake blood on the table and I walked out of the room.
Whoa.
They called my reps so fast and they were like, we want him on the show. Like, we want to do this. And my reps at the time were like, dude, you're like already like, you know, you just pitched Comedy Central. They want the show. You know, why would you go be on someone else's show when you can have your own show?
You didn't make the wrong decision. I know your account. Yeah, I know your checkbook and your wallet says you're an idiot. But Barry Katz sitting to my right. Yeah. Steven Tyler to my Joe Perry, or vice versa.
Yeah.
If you have a shot in this town, you get one at bat to have creative control and own something.
not have a salary, not pull a check like a two guard on an NBA team, to actually be the guy cutting the checks, to be that owner, you got to take that hack, right? I mean,
you absolutely have to, and you got on Punk, that's a minimum wage. It's like literally $967 a show.
But look at everybody that did Punk.
No,
BJ Novak.
Put the list together of all the people who've done Punk.
It bothers you.
Put the list together and put the whole list together every season, and then list how many broke through. Yes, Whitney and Dax and BJ broke through. It's a lot of names that you don't know. That nobody knows that didn't.
Skylar Stone.
So you had your shot. So you had your shot to do your own show. You created it, and it's great, and you have to do that. And you'll always be known as a guy that took you to the next level in this town. Also, that audition that you did for Punk'd, what's amazingly risky is that they told you to do a story, and you did the opposite. You took a risk, and it worked. I don't mean to channel Kirk Fox, looks like Vio Violante here, but the fact is that when Kirk did it, he sat down, and they always say, tell me a story, and it was Jason Goldberg.
Yeah.
And he sat down and just sat down, and Jason sits down, and he says, tell me a story. And Kirk just said,
you tell me
a fucking story.
Yeah.
And then he just stood up and said, you got the job.
Yeah.
So you went through this elaborate thing. Kirk took the risk, too. He got it. You took a risk. You got it. And a lot of people go and they just tell a regular story and they don't take the risk.
Oh, can you imagine the fucking snore fest? Person after person, like, I'm going to go in and tell a real story.
Oh, my God. No.
One time in band camp, I did not put a flute in my pussy.
Yeah.
Like, think of how fucking dull most comics are. Like,
oh, yeah,
There's like 20% of all comics that we can't wait to hang out with each other.
Yeah.
We just laugh our balls off.
Yeah.
And just think
Is Skylar one of them?
Me and Skylar always laugh our dicks off when we're together.
I do.
Imagine Eddie Ift sitting in that. You want to hear a story? One time I was working out.
You want to hear a story?
I like breaking Eddie's balls.
He's a great guy. I love Eddie.
I'm going to tell you, Skylar, you definitely made the right decision because you had ownership.
Well, now I have the same decision. So I have an offer. I don't really want to talk about where the places are.
Just take the money.
But
forget the ownership. You had your show.
I have an offer to do my own show on cable or be a series regular on a network show, and I don't know which one to take.
Do you have a manager?
No, I don't. I have an agent and a lawyer.
Why don't you call Katz?
I have the papers right here.
Why don't you call Ruben Kincaid over here?
Well,
for the
this is what Skylar and I have a history, and sometimes it's like I feel like he doesn't call me because he feels like I maybe have
not... You're a Jew thief.
You maybe have not what?
Well, yeah, what is it?
I maybe have not given him what he's wanted from me over the years, and that's why he doesn't call me about these things.
I've called you before. I've absolutely called you before.
But now that you're married and have to pay the bills, maybe there's,
Wow. You guys are rounding third? I got to go to acupuncture because I have slow sperm.
What?
Yeah, I got to go to acupuncture.
Okay.
This is more stories with Skylar Stone, and it's been an hour. Barry Katz, Skylar Stone. This has never been done before in the history of my podcast.
You're kidding, right?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Look, that's right. 5 of 1 right there.
I don't know if he's honored.
No, this is good.
What?
And you got to tell your fucking stolen car story.
Oh, we're continuing the podcast right now.
Yes.
As you leave, this is
Joan Rivers.
I thought you meant this has never
Johnny.
Been done before. It's never cut so short. And you mean we're actually going to continue.
Fuck
all right.
Yeah.
This is funny. All right.
Because this is what's really happened. In all fairness to the listener, corporate-wise, Katz and I are melding podcasts. This has all been a big deal. No. We're going to do the New York
stories.
Giant Jets.
I'm moving to noon.
More standard. Love you.
Love you, brother. So I just want to talk about the network thing versus your own show.
Mm-hmm.
So the network show, normally what happens for those of you in the audience that don't know this, and this is Barry Katz filling in for Jay Moore.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
Is unbelievable. I've never had this happen before.
Jay's getting his sperm work done.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand. Does he want another kid?
I don't know. I think he's just, wants to make sure that he has the bullets in the chamber.
I guess so.
So normally what happens when you said you have a network television opportunity as a series regular, for those of you who don't know, what happens is you audition for something with a casting director, and then if they like you, they bring you back for the producers, and then you're in a room and you audition for the producers. Then if they like you, they might bring you back for a second callback, or they might just decide right then and there to test you. And what that means to test you is that means that they do a contract with you that's like 6 years, 6.5 years, 7 years of your rates and everything you're going to do. Then you go and you test with other people for the network in a room with all of, I'm sorry, for the studio in a room with all the people who are financing the show, like at a Sony or a studio like that. And then if they like you, they'll bring you forward to the network. And then if the network likes you, you'll get the show.
Mm-hmm.
But normally networks do pilot episodes. They don't do series, full series commitments, unless you're like doing something like a company called Denmar Mercury, which does 1090 deals, which is like the Tyler Perry model, where they'll actually just not even do a pilot. They'll shoot 10 episodes and then they'll decide from the ratings whether they're going to do another
trigger the 90. Other 90. Yeah. Anger Management did
yes,
that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for you in this network series regular thing, are you saying that you've already tested?
Yeah, it's a prank show, and I already did a presentation, and now they want to do like a full blown pilot.
Got it. So they want to do a pilot. So there, that doesn't make any difference if they want to do a pilot or not, because how many pilots get picked up in network television?
Yeah.
Maybe 3%. So
is it that low, you think?
It's that low.
Wow.
It's sometimes it's less. Now, sometimes it's more because the networks are reducing their costs of what they're doing. So you have a company, let's say, like CBS, a network that used to do like 20 half-hour pilots, and now there's like one slot, and now they'll do eight. So the odds of when CBS does a pilot are probably, 15% of it getting going, as opposed to, but that's because they're doing less. But in other places, it's much less. So what I'm saying is that if the odds are the same of your pilot, where you're going to be doing it, where it's your show that you create, the same as the odds at the other place,
mm-hmm.
well, then why not go to a place where you control the variables?
Yeah.
And even if the same thing happens again, the fact is that people are going to know. That's Skylar Stone. It's unbelievable. I don't know how he does it, but like he came out here, he got Comics on Delivery, Comics on Demand, what was it?
Wait, my show?
Yeah, what's the name of the game?
It's called Con.
Con.
Comedy Central.
But Con stood for?
No, it was just Con.
Con, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, and so you did Con, and you just came to town, and you got your own show,
yeah.
which got on the air
yeah.
for a certain number of episodes.
That's 24, yeah.
24 episodes.
No, I was 24 years old, I was saying, but it was six.
How many episodes?
Six.
Yeah, so ask all the comedians you know how many times they've created a show that's got on the air.
Yeah.
Okay, and you can count them on half a hand. And so you did it. You're like an anomaly. And now you're about to do it again with another pilot. And it may not get on the air, but the other one might not get on the air. And chances are, if you're going to get a job on that prank show that isn't yours, you're going to have a chance to get on another show that's a prank show, because people are developing prank shows all the time.
Yeah.
Including you.
Yeah.
So that's my advice. Always go.
So just keep taking the bigger swing where you can have. I stand to make more if my own show goes, because it's my.
I would tell you that if you stood to make less.
Oh really? So it's more about the creative control.
Creative control and the respect of knowing that you are a creator, an executive producer, a writer, and a performer. All in one. It's like doing stand-up. That's the greatest thing about being a stand-up comedian for all the comedians listening. You get to write, direct, produce, star in your own show. I mean, every single time you go on, whether it's at an open mic or you're headlining a show, it's the greatest. And
well, I hope I get this one. I mean, this is... So I've been out here... So if it was 2004 when I sold Con, this would be the fourth time I've created a show and got it to pilot, at least, which is pretty good.
And I'm saying this again.
Mm-hmm.
You know comedians very well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Name one person who's created four television shows that have gone to pilot in 10 years.
Well, did Jay ever create any of his shows?
Yes, he has.
Because he created more stories, right?
Yes, he has. I mean, he's...
Or more sports.
The point I'm trying to make, why I shouldn't ask the question, is the fact that literally it's like 1% of 1% of 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're able to do is really amazing. The only thing holding you back is the fact that one of these things hasn't gone the distance yet. And once it does, people will be looking at you in a different light. It's like... You take somebody like Aziz Ansari, who's incredibly talented and a brilliant, brilliant young man. When he was doing comedy in New York, I think he would admit to this if you were sitting here, he was doing a lot of spots after midnight at the Comedy Cellar.
Mm-hmm.
But a role came around that was right for him. Now, if you look at the breakdowns, and for those of you who don't know, the breakdowns are all the roles in television and film from all different types, and it describes every kind of race, religion, age. If you look at the breakdowns over a year in network television, I mean, you would find like the most limited handful of roles for somebody like Aziz Ansari. But that role was there. Amy Poehler saw a role in that way, I believe, and Greg Daniels, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they auditioned people who were that type. And he went in, never booked an acting job, wasn't even getting paid really as a stand-up comic, but he went into the audition and each process. And when the money was on the line, he booked the fucking job. And he booked the job, and that pilot went. And then he's gone the distance, and now he's one of the biggest comedy stars ever, fueled by booking the job. Again, he didn't create the show. He was a hired hand. But again, he'd come to town just like you, similar story. But he booked the job that went on the air for 4 or 5 years. Again, didn't create it, but now he can create any show he wants to do. And he can go out and sell any show he wants to do 5 years later. Not a bad college education, and also being a guy who's internationally known as a stand-up as well.
But isn't that example an example as to why I should be thinking about the network? Because you're talking about Parks and Rec, and he was a hired hand, and now he can create anything he wants.
The difference being is your show is not a scripted show that you're talking about. It's a prank show.
Yeah.
It's just that's a different thing. A prank show has a 1 year life of a person behind the scenes. Whitney Cummings, 1 year. Dax Shepard, 1 year. It's you know, and Whitney Cummings, you know, people talk about, well, you know, Punk'd broke this or did that, and Punk'd had a lot to do with a lot of things. But Whitney Cummings is one of the hardest working people I've ever known in my entire life. And you honestly work very, very hard. You have a lot of distractions, and now you have more distractions because you got married.
Yeah.
And I say this to anybody who listens because it's kind of, I don't mean it to be depressing. Very, very few comedians make it when they're married and have kids and then make it. They normally make it and then make the decision to start a family and have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because the amount of work it takes to be a great parent and a great husband and to really do what you have to do in that relationship, if you really add up the hours in the day, it's an extraordinary amount of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're single and you have those hours open, you have them to dedicate to work on your acting, to work on your stand-up, to work on your writing, and it's all open time. And if you add up that extra 20 or 30 hours a week over 50 weeks or so, that's a lot of hours. That's mm-hmm. a lot of weeks, and it accelerates your career. So the challenge that you have is the fact that you are in a relationship and you are a great husband, and you are a great dad. And that's something that takes hours. And so the fact that you're on the verge of something, with that happening, you could again be somebody who's one of the first to do something like that as well.
You can't think of anybody that made it after kids?
I'm saying there's very, very few.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Seinfeld did kids, family after.
Think about it.
A lot of people did kids, family after. Larry David, I don't even know if he has kids. But yeah, no, you're right. A lot of them, you know, didn't. But the good thing about me is, I mean, they're my stepkids, so they're not with me 100% of the time. So, you know, that does cut down on some of the time. The other thing is, my wife is very supportive, and like sometimes I look at her, I go, "Hey, I've got to do this right now," and she just gets that. Like, we're very good at passing the baton.
And she's an amazing woman. And
she's,
you know,
awesome.
One of the things, I believe met her just briefly.
Mm-hmm.
At a, I think it was a Ralphie May,
in
Vegas with Lana.
Yeah.
Getting a little emotional here, but I met your wife to be, and I saw you together, and I thought to myself, this is why every time you turn on the radio, every song is written about love and what love is supposed to be and what a relationship is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw you as a person who was in love with somebody who had existing family and existing kids,
mm-hmm.
and drama, a lot of drama in the background. Because whenever you have somebody has kids, there's another person. My mother used to say, "This horror." I thought it was horrible when she said it. She used to say about divorce, death is sweeter. If somebody passes away, it's horrible, but they're not there anymore.
Yeah.
But in divorce, they're always there.
Yeah.
And there's always that factor. And I saw you two together, and I thought to myself, that's the kind of love that everybody wants and everybody should have. And
yeah. And to have it with that in the background makes it stronger. I mean, she's always tried to tell me that because I've been weak before. I've said, oh, my God, I got to go. You know, he's too much, you know, because he tries to make me leave, the ex. But she's always gave me that look like, we can, you said earlier, I always persevere, and she's used that words too. She's like, you know, we can persevere, we can get through this, and we have. I don't know how, but we totally have. You know, I've spent a lot of money in family law courts. I'm sure you have as well, but that's an ugly place, dude. That's a great quote. Your mom said that?
Yes.
That's a great quote. Weren't you, correct me if I'm wrong, weren't you visiting your mom when you were going to see Ralphie?
Yeah, I was on my way to visit her, yes.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
So I think that for you, it's like what you're talking about with this stuff. It's fascinating because it's like true of any profession. It's like all you got to do is do great work and just get to the point where you get the shot to do it over and over again and show people over and over again. It's like Jay on the radio. You get a job on the radio, and I'm not going to mention all the people who've gotten radio shows in the last year and a half and how many of them don't have radio shows anymore. And he, you know, just announced that he's going to have a new deal and a new situation. And they were trying to renegotiate and get his deal done to make it further, like almost like less than a year in. Because if you're doing something, America will always tell you if you're doing the right thing. You just got to get that shot to get on.
Yeah.
And so for you, you just need that shot. And once you get that shot where you're on, then America will tell you if you're doing the right thing, and hopefully they'll tell you you're doing the right thing, and you'll be all set.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited about it because, you know, I feel like with this show, it's similar to what Jay's doing. I just like how Jay's created a legion of these devoted fans that have all these inside jokes that when they call in, and the hey man, and I mean, everything, that's fun. That's when you know. I mean, Jay just found a way to make Twitter not negative and like have everybody be in on. I mean, it's negative. I mean, the Moyers and Jay are making fun of people in sports half the time. So I guess there's negativity in that someone's getting made fun of. But half the time when they're making fun of someone, they absolutely deserve what they're being made fun of about because it's some mistake they made either on the field or in their personal life. But you know, I've always liked the idea of a motley crew of just weirdo fans and bizarre people, you know, and showing that fans, you know, are actually funny. And this show is going to have a fan element where I bring like the fans and the viewers on the ride, the people that tweet me become part of the show. And so there's some similarities to what Jay's done that I would like to do on the show. And I think, yeah.
Royce Clayton said on one of my podcasts, he said this thing, which I'm sure has been repeated. Royce Clayton, he played a shortstop
right?
for
yeah.
17 years, and he won a championship with the Red Sox in 2007. And he said something that I think is replayed in a quote of some funny thing that Jay does. He said, study greatness.
Yeah.
Imitate greatness, become great. And so that's what you're doing. And so I think that, again, if you can stay out of your own way and just do amazing stuff, you're going to be fine. You have the foundation laid. The problem with you is the fact that in the beginning, it's really hard when you experience success early and you don't technically, and I'm not saying this negatively, technically deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jeff Cesario was a great comic, and Dennis Miller called him one day and said, you know, I got 6 episodes of a show on HBO they gave me. I want you to be my executive producer. And Jeff, I'm paraphrasing in so many words, said, Dennis, I don't know how to tell you this. I haven't really done that much in television. I've gotten coffee for some people. I mean, yeah. Some low-level stuff I'm doing, but I'm not you're my executive producer. But Dennis, I don't really, I don't really, listen, I'm going to have some other people, but you're my executive producer. Do you want it or don't you?
Yeah.
He takes the gig. Literally 4 episodes in, they submit the Jim Carrey episode to the Emmy Awards. And then 6 months later, he's up on stage accepting an Emmy.
Oh, my gosh.
And so...
it can happen like that.
And that's sort of what happened to you with Con. It's not like you won an Emmy, but you got on the air on the most relevant comedy network in the world.
Yeah.
When they had amazing shows on, and the spotlight was on a guy who... everybody was saying, wait a second, I've been pounding the pavement here in L.A. for 10 years. Where'd this guy come from? Hey, you want to know where he came from? While he was behind the scenes in the shadows, he was working every hour of every day creating a concept for a show.
That's true.
That he thought was great. While you're trying to get laid or you're, you know, doing whatever, talking to these comedians, busting balls upstairs till 3 in the morning, or just hanging out with your friends, or going to a dance club, or whatever it is, he's in his room in the darkness with a little light on it saying, hey, I'm going to create this. This is the second act. This is the third act.
Yeah.
And then you fought to sell it, and you sold it. Then you shot a pilot. It's like the NFL playoffs. It's like you go, and we won the division. Oh, shit, we got to play the next week. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, we won that game. Oh, we got to play for the championship game?
Yeah.
Hey, we won the championship game. Oh, fuck, we got to play the Super Bowl. And so for you, you won every step of the game. You got on the air. The thing you didn't win was America spoke, and they didn't come in droves like the network thought they would for that concept and for what was happening, for whatever reason.
Well, the lawsuits didn't help either.
The lawsuits don't help, but Punk'd had a $10 million lawsuit their first season.
Right.
Scare Tactics had a huge lawsuit. So
yeah.
Lawsuits don't help, but if you're number one in the ratings, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to be
fine. They kept Charlie Sheen on forever, and there were probably plenty of...
So that's the thing. So the fact is there was something that was happening on the show where the audience just said, you know what, we would rather not watch as much as we did the first episode going to the second episode and the second episode going to the third and the third going to the fourth and the fourth going to the fifth. That's normally what happens. It's like they come to sample and they either tell their friends and more people come the next episode, the same amount of people stay,
Or
it goes down. In your case, it went down. I don't know the reasons. It could have been you as the way you were on camera, mm-hmm. because you were new and you didn't have like if it were you today and you had the chance to do that show now, obviously I'm sure you'd look at things you would have done differently, but you
for
didn't
sure.
have the experience. And normally what happens in comedy is the fact that I've never known a situation where a comedian has gone to syndication, has done like 100 episodes of a television show, who hasn't been doing comedy 10 years. And if you don't have the 10 years under your belt, you don't know how to deal with people, you don't know how to politically do things, you don't know on camera the best way to do it. And it's like I said early on when Jay was here in the studio, it's like there's things that you could do differently, but you didn't know how to do things differently because you didn't have the 10 years experience. Now you do. So this new pilot has a much, much greater shot of going than the last one. And that's why I say you should go with that. Absolutely.
That's a great way of looking at it. Yeah, because I also read that book. What is that book about the 10-year?
Outliers.
Outliers, yeah. I read that a couple years ago, and I feel like I just kind of hit my 10-year mark. I mean, if you want to be technical, first time I ever stepped on stage at stand-up was 1999, but then I didn't do it for 3 years after that. You know what I mean? So, like, it really has been about 10 years, just a little over, actually. But when I read the book, it hadn't been. I was like, oh, I wonder how I'll feel in a couple years when I actually hit that 10-year mark. And I don't know, man. I feel like I'm handling people better than ever. I have problems with people, and it goes better. Like, if something goes down, you know, I don't. I mean, today wasn't a great example because I was about to say I don't take things as personally as I used to, but then you saw me earlier. But you have to understand, Jay, I put Jay in a different category than people. You know, he's just, I wouldn't be where I'm at without him. So, you know.
And neither would I.
Yeah.
So
I think I'm more sensitive still with him. There's something about him that, I don't know. I even find myself not completely 1,000% being myself around Jay. If that sounds weird to you, I don't know. But when you looked at someone and said, wow, I really like this guy, I want to do what he does, and then somehow you end up being his friend, I don't know. It's a different experience than when you just met somebody before it. Or I don't know. There's just something. There's something weird where I still, there's about three people I could think of that I still get personal. I take things personal in front of him, and he's definitely one of them. And you saw it. So that's funny you picked up on it.
And I have to go. This is horrible, but I want to ask you, is there any plugs or anything you want to say on behalf of yourself? What's happening in your life? What's going on that you want to talk about real briefly before we ride off into the sunset here on?
Well, I think Jay just asked me to go to Phoenix with him. Isn't that what happened? I don't know if he's serious about that, I've got a monthly show at the Hollywood Improv called Comedy Rocks. I have no idea when this thing's going to be on, but my next dates for Comedy Rocks are this Tuesday, October the 14th, and then Tuesday, November 18th, this coming show, we have Jeff Ross, Adam Devine, myself. It's going to be good. And Marilyn Rice Cub. And then I've got a movie that just hit DVD, Walking with Dinosaurs. I'm one of the four lead voices in that. And then I got three movies coming out, but I don't have dates on those. So
that's okay. Sounds like you're doing it, my friend. Every comic wants to be able to do voiceovers and be able to do acting and to be able to do reality and do stand-up and use all their talents that they have, that God gave them, to show the world what they can do and inspire as many people as possible. And you are doing it, my friend. This is Barry Katz for more stories, and Skylar Stone, thank you so much. What an honor to have you here, and this is an honor to be the first guest host ever on More Stories. Take off. Bye.
Bye.
Broken threads, broken springs, broken idols, broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving, ain't no use joking, everything is broken. Broken bottles, broken plates, broken switches, broken gates, broken dishes, broken pots. Streets are filled with broken hearts, broken words never meant to be spoken. Everything is broken. Seems like every time you stop and turn around, broken cutters, broken saws, broken buckles, broken laws, broken.
babes.